Hello! Welcome! Welcome! Thank you for coming to Anime More Than Cartoons panel here about at South by Southwest. We are excited to have you guys here. We're excited to be here. Right?
Yeah.
Yes!
All right. Absolutely. You guys are excited too, right? Good, good, good. Awesome. My name is Justin Rojas. I am the senior social manager. Can't talk. Senior social media manager for Funimation Entertainment. I'll be moderating the panel today. Let me introduce to you guys all of the crew we have here. As I said, there I am with Funimation. To my right, we have Mike Laidlaw at BioWare.
Hi.
Hello. He's a creative director, works on awesome things like Dragon Age. To his right, we have Margot Yabs from Sony Entertainment.
Hi. Woo.
Hello. Doing awesome digital things in PlayStation Network and all those kinds of crazy places. To my left, I have Craig Crossley with Smith Global Entertainment, or Management, excuse me, and Crossley, I gotta make sure.
Those guys.
Media, yes.
Just those guys.
That guy. Yeah. And to his left, we have Ryo Yamaguchi with Nico Nico.
Hello.
Hello. Before we get started here, I wanted to ask you guys, actually, how many of you consider yourselves anime fans? Okay, so pretty good anime turnout. How many here for just because it sounded like an interesting panel? I mean, minus the anime. Like, you didn't really know what anime was. How many of you don't know what anime is? Okay, nice. That's good. I'm glad. That makes my job easier. So, as I said, I'm going to be moderating this panel. I work at Funimation Entertainment, which is North America's largest distributor of Japanese animation. We also dabble in some live-action films and are working on co-producing some original animations with guys like Mike here at BioWare. So we'll be talking about the kind of the transmedia growth of anime, kind of how it is nowadays, you know, how much easier it is to access how it's been affected by digital distribution, and just kind of the growth of anime into not only the DVD market, but into music, into movies, into the online world, etc. So, as I said, introducing next to me is Mike Laidlaw. Mike, would you like to tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. So I'm a creative director with BioWare, which is a division nowadays of Electronic Arts. We've been in business for approximately 15 years. Our titles include Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, Knights of the Old Republic, and up to some more recent series, including Mass Effect, like the recently released Mass Effect 3, Knights of the Old Republic, and the later Star Wars The Old Republic, which is an MMO. We've always been, I think, very focused on story and storytelling as one of our core pillars for the experience we try to deliver for games. And what we found about 4 or 5 years ago, we branched out into our own intellectual properties or brands with Mass Effect and Dragon Age, rather than working with licensors. And as a result, then, we've seen a lot of opportunities to work with partners like Funimation to deliver additional content that helps, you know, flesh out the world, explore, you know, storylines and elements of the games that wouldn't translate as well into an interactive experience. Something more linear, something that goes into the backstory of characters that's a little out of the timeline, or that wouldn't involve the player as much. This has been a really interesting growth opportunity for us. We've expanded into comics, we've expanded into novels, and Funimation is our first partner to work with in a more like linear entertainment form. So far it's been an incredible partnership and really exciting for us.
One of the interesting things on our end, just like Mike was saying, typically we're just a licensing and distribution company also. Being able to work on a project like Dragon Age and Mass Effect has given us a lot more control and input into the creation of the project. Typically, we don't actually create the anime. We typically just license it once it's completed. But we're involved with BioWare and EA step-by-step, creating the scripts, working out the character backstory, and everything's, you know, fitting into those worlds, which is really cool for us, being able to be a part of something like that. And then potentially, who knows, you know, being part of the games later on, too.
And we have, I think we have a bit of a teaser to show you guys for what's coming up.
All right. Oh, audio? There we go.
to protect the Chancery Cassandra, as did Byron. Sometimes your blade becomes your shield.
So, I'm flattered. We're super excited about it. As it says there, it'll be available on Blu-ray and DVD this May 29th. And if you guys are sticking around through Sunday, we're actually going to have a sneak peek of the first 20 minutes at Screenburn, which is in the Palmer Event Center at 5 o'clock. So, check it out. Stop by the booth. We actually have a booth at Screenburn 2, featuring Dragon Age and Mass Effect. I've got a big dragon on a castle turret out there, so come by. We've got some promo swag to give to you, some dog tags for Mass Effect and Dragon Age. And speaking of Dragon Age and Mass Effect, we're also working with these films, tying Craig in here with what he does. We're actually working on music, originally produced music for some of these things. Craig, tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Well, what's really interesting is that we've worked with Funimation in trying to develop more specific music to go along with some of their titles. We've actually created a new entity called Funimusic, which is a joint venture between Funimation Entertainment and Smith Global Media, as well as Crosley Group. A little bit about us, just so that you understand, because we understand that a lot of these titles and dealing with the anime culture, you guys want to make sure that there's a legitimate source coming to you, not just to piggyback off of the success that people like Funimation have had, but really to provide solid entertainment. Our group is really a joint venture spinoff with myself, Craig Crosley, and my partner in the back, Harry Smith. It was a venture that we decided on while we were working with Overbrook Entertainment to really go out and forge our destiny in what at the time was an emerging digital media market and aligning top entertainment brands with corporate brands. Over the years, we've worked with companies like Sears Holdings, Kmart, Best Buy. We've worked with hospitality companies like Capella Resorts, Caesar Hotels. We've actually worked with Sony Entertainment. We actually developed their initial direct-to-consumer strategy on their music side and worked with Universal Music and Konami Entertainment, a lot of those companies that were looking to really extend their brands more so with entertainment and more so as it relates to music. We've worked with specific clients like Will Smith and Overbrook, Dr. Dre and Aftermath, Jamie Foxx and No Brain Entertainment, just to name a few. So the question really comes out, you know, what does Funimusic do? Well, simply, our mission is to use our proven model to integrate and align Funimation's anime properties with high-profile artists and producers to create music specifically for the anime audience. By doing so, our bet is to create a new era in music entertainment hub that's not only dedicated to the expansion of Funimation and its products, but more importantly, creates a new segment of music. I mean, you know, everyone knows the story of how the digital music retailers have really turned the music industry upside down. And from the consumer's perspective, everything is peaches. You know, everybody loves it because music is more accessible than ever before. The ability to purchase singles now gives people the ability to take their entire music spend and spread it across as many different genres and as many different artists as they could possibly want. I mean, I think about when I was younger and I would take my allowance and go out and buy an album just because I heard one song. And then lo and behold, there's only one song on the album that I liked, and now I'm pissed because I can't go buy G.I. Joe the next day. Well, from the perspective of the music makers, quite honestly, it's Armageddon. You know, we have essentially become scavengers roaming the earth after the music apocalypse, looking for pockets of consumers that we can sell our music to or introduce our music to, and then hope that we can create enough value so that they go out and purchase it instead of sharing it. So what does this really mean? Well, because today's consumer has a variety of opportunities and their media life is so fragmented, we have to go out and find new audiences to tap into, much like anime. So Funimusic really represents an opportunity for the convergence and cross-pollination of the music and anime industries. So convergence and cross-pollination, you know, let's talk about that. What is it really? Well, convergence. Across all monetizable online consumption channels, the primary global consumer of music is the 20 to 24-year-old man. Well, oddly enough, the primary consumer of anime is the 18 to 34-year-old male. So there's a natural fit in the consumer base. We just have to go in and extract that. Then when you start talking about cross-pollination, Harry and I's approach has been to merge these two bases together and personally introduce anime to the artists in their music, while at the same time exposing the artist's fan base to the new world of anime. So the result is an expansion of both of these bases. So once we go in and extract that base, now the idea is to give that audience a true identity through music instead of them feeling like they have to go other places. So, you know, Funimation does an amazing job at taking a lot of these anime titles and giving them an American identity. You know, whether it's taking something from Japan and then redubbing it with English voices and really making it more acceptable for American television, but they oftentimes leave the music in place for the purist. You know, a lot of you guys believe that, you know, there's a segment of the culture that really likes the Japanese music or J-pop that's in these titles, and believe that it's a pillar of integrity for the titles and that it shouldn't be tampered with. And we don't want to offend any of those fans because we understand that. So our mission becomes to service this culture by delivering music that's inspired by your favorite title and offer our musical interpretation that's both respectful and compelling at the same time. So creating these musical interpretations is not something that Harry and I take lightly. We don't just go out and start grabbing music and licensing things to stick with a title and then throw it out into the market. We actually learn to speak anime. We go through and analyze each title, its production style, its story, its audience, everything that's available to give us an accurate analysis and portrayal. This includes watching all of the episodes of specific titles. Now, it sounds great, a lot of fun, but try sitting in your office or sitting at home and watching anime all day long and see how your colleagues or family respond and see how quickly they intervene with a psychiatric intervention. At this point, I was, you know, always that fun father that would sit down and talk to my son and all of his friends about science and math, and I come from the world of entertainment and sports, so I would always provide all of his tennis team with sports facts about how they should behave on the court. Now, all of a sudden, I'm getting calls at night where a lot of his friends want to talk about Dragon Ball Z and Full Metal Alchemist. So things have changed a bit. But once we analyze a title, we then sit with the producers where possible and work as closely with Funimation staff of gurus to really better understand the story, the characters, and any nuances. Then we study the demographical audience of each title and in some cases hold conversations through Justin and his online forums to really find out what that audience likes. Once we complete the study, then we carefully develop the music direction. We select the genre. For some titles, you know, this might be more goth, it might be more death metal. It might give us an opportunity to get into really, you know, more of the hip-hop and R&B space. The idea is that nothing is predetermined in terms of the types of music that Harry and I create. It's really more aligning with the title and what that audience likes. We have award-winning producers in all genres that we work with. And then based on the chosen genre, we reach out to our producer teams to start submitting tracks. Once we get those tracks, we really shape-shift them to really fit the idea of the title. We spend a lot of time considering different artists that we want to work with, high-profile artists that we believe would capture the voice of their particular title, and then we work with them to really kind of stretch and understand what anime is so that we get something that's really more of an out-of-the-box performance and allow them to really sit down and create lyrics that carefully align with those specific titles. So the idea is that once all of this is done, once we've analyze the markets, once we've looked at the titles, understood the titles, once we've extracted this base that we want to become more familiar with in anime, then the idea is that we would create this new segment of music and identity. This is really the process that we brought to Dragon Age. I'm really excited about you guys getting an opportunity, you know, when you do buy the DVD, to see what we've done with the music there. And this is a relationship that's going to expand into Mass Effect. And we've actually got 10 more titles that we're creating music for, with the idea of being able to create quarterly releases that we really perceive as more as offering something back, our gift or Funimation's gift to the anime audience from a music perspective. So hopefully you guys will enjoy what we've created, and we look forward to more in the future.
Yep. Thank you, Greg. We will take, by the way, that was a lot of information. So we're actually going to do Q&A after we get through everyone talking about what we're doing. So next up, actually, we're going to have Margot Yabs over here talk about what she's doing with Sony.
All right, so I'm going to start off and see how many of you people know about the Video Unlimited video store for the PlayStation Network? How many of you guys have downloaded content from their video store? Okay. So that's the division that I work for. I work in the Partner Operations Division at Sony Network Entertainment. We have our headquarters based in Los Angeles, and we do everything in-house from encoding video, working with metadata, artwork to get everything ready to publish on the storefront globally. We are currently in 9 territories, and we have multiple devices from the PS3 to Bravia TVs to Blu-ray players, even online. You can download our content from our website. And so how I got into this is that I used to work at Funimation, and so that's my relationship with anime. I was there for about 3 years, and I worked on the video team working to transcode video, get video ready to distribute it to iTunes, Xbox, PlayStation, Amazon, Hulu, everywhere, you know, as on all digital platforms on the web. And so that's what I used to do, and then I transferred over to working at Sony. And what I learned from being in Hollywood, working in LA in Hollywood, and working with just a distributor that handles all kinds of content, is that there are a lot of people out there who don't know how to handle content in Hollywood. For example, we had a programming team, and they would make all major selections for our content, and they didn't know what was what. They needed somebody they didn't have anybody in-house that could help go through everything and analyze things and let them know what titles are good and what aren't bad. And so having come on board, I've pretty much been one of, you know, the anime gatekeeper person.
Yeah, I want to interject here that, like she was saying, a lot of other media or a lot of other genres weren't doing what we were doing. And with anime, with what Margot did, I mean, pioneered a lot of the way, not just for how anime is distributed, but how digital content in general has been distributed. So that's one of the reasons she's at Sony now, because she had that all under her belt.
And so that's what my team does. And right here, this is our video storefront, the anime section. And as you can see, we have slotted anime in its own space. And if you go to the TV section on our storefront, you can search by genre.
I went there over. My bad. There we go.
You could search by genre. You can search by TV networks. But anime has its own space where all the studios are placed right there, so there's easy access for the fans. Go to the next slide. And this is just a snapshot of the North American analysis of the North American film content and its relationship to anime. And as you can see, anime is anime films, there's a very small sliver, it's a small piece of our entire film collection. And I think it's, you know, it's mainly because we get content from Sony Pictures, you know, Warner Brothers, all the major studios, all the independent studios. And so in terms of anime film content, we don't have that much. And if you go to the next slide, and if you look at TV, you can see that anime has a bigger piece of the pie. And that's, you know, that's because gamers, there's a lot of gamers are, you know, anime fans.
There's a ton of crossover, as we've all said, between gamer fans. That's why we're doing properties like Dragon Age and Mass Effect, taking advantage of the overlap of the demographics. And as you can see, you know, anime is a large chunk of, I mean, and this is everything, you know. So anime fits in, and most of the stuff that we have is series based rather than films. So TV offerings, there's a lot more to go around.
Yeah, we have hundreds and hundreds of seasons and series of anime content from multiple studios. And so that's why anime has a bigger piece of the pie. And like he said, we have since we have the PlayStation video game store, it's easy for us to do cross-promotion for video games that are based on animes. Mm-hmm. And so that's a strong point for us.
Okay. Next slide.
Yes.
Sony.
And this is our homepage. I took this screenshot just a few weeks ago because we had a we were releasing the season 9, I believe, of Dragon Ball Z digitally. And if you take a look, if you look closer, you can see that Dragon Ball Z is the 8th top TV show out of 50 nationally in the U.S. And in general, some I check the video store just to see how my content is doing, how things are going live. And every time that I check the store, there's always at least 3, 4, 5 anime series that are in the top 50 consistently. So that speaks to our demographic and how, you know, people, there's high demand for anime.
Exactly. If you're comparing it to the other 10 shows that are on this list, I mean, you got Family Guy, you've got Two and a Half Men, you've got Archer, which I love Archer, and The Walking Dead at number one. I mean, stuff like this, especially Dragon Ball Z being one of our properties, being, of course, our largest and most mass property, but with anime actually finding its place into this top 10 is a big deal for us, and it shows kind of how it's becoming more widely accepted as a mass media rather than niche markets. Which, again, that's one of our goals at what we do at Funimation is to bring it beyond the niche market, because the content's there, the quality is there. We just need to put it in front of the right people so that they can get access to it. And with what Margot does here with the PlayStation Network is providing access to the specific gamer community that can latch onto this and help it grow.
Yes.
And speaking of
anime,
on there,
we currently have an anime sale going live right now. So if you've never downloaded anime, want to check it out, the sale is going on until the 18th. And we do have some free episodes for Dragon Ball. The first episode of Dragon Ball Z Season 9 is available for free, and I just downloaded it on my Vita, one of our latest devices.
How many of you guys have a Vita already? Anybody? One?
I do.
Two. I haven't even seen one yet. This is the first time I got to see a Vita.
So. Yeah, it's a pretty cool. And, I just downloaded this. We were in the green room, and I downloaded this episode, and it finished pretty quickly.
So, anime on the go.
Yes, anime on the go. Mm-hmm. So I encourage you, if you've never checked out anime, just check it out.
Cool. All right. And like you were saying, making the anime as widely available as possible is a really big goal for us. And so Funimation is working with Nico Nico here, which Rio will talk about getting more distribution faster and, to you in every way possible that we can. So Rio, tell us a little bit what you've got going on.
Hi, guys. My name is Rio Yamaguchi, and I'm actually working in a social video network company called Nico Nico, and my title is Anime Specialist. Actually, this is actually funny because we have a genre where we have politics, space, fashion, games, anime, and then boss is like, so you know about anime, you're like the most specialist in anime, so you could be the anime guy. And we're like, okay, so what's my title? And then he's like, how about anime dude? So we were actually that close to being my title anime dude, but it wasn't really...
I would have pushed for that.
I know. So it became anime specialist. And it's kind of funny because people look at my business card, they're like, anime specialist? What do you do?
What does that mean?
I know anime. Anyways, yes. So my company, Nico Nico was actually originated from Japan. And it started as a video sharing website where it's like, it's like YouTube, where people, like users, upload their videos. And, but what was different between YouTube was Nico Nico was successful to overlay comments on the video screen where on real time. So, when it's like a funny situation and people write LOL, the LOL goes across the screen when it's really funny. And not just that, we have people can do user live broadcast, and also we stream simulcast of animes. So next slide, please. So that's actually a screen where we have comments on our videos? Well, it was kind of dirty, but I mean, some people like don't like it. But after you kind of read it, it's actually funny because, like, you know, if you upload your video and you have your part, you know, if you make a video, and it's like, you know, you put like a funny part, and if everyone writes like, oh, that's funny, and you kind of get proud of it.
Yeah, we've done this at conventions and whatnot where we're doing live streams, and it's really cool to see the comments. Real time into where, like, for this particular portion of the video, so it's directly referencing the video rather than when you're, like, say on a YouTube and its comments are in the queue below.
Yes.
You can't really match exactly where that comment was said on top of the video, so you don't know what they're talking about.
Yes.
So being able to watch stuff like this, it's really interesting to see, especially if you're doing the live stream and you're seeing what they're saying about you in real time.
Well, especially given that it kind of aggregates, I think a content creator looking through it would be able to see which parts resonate with the audience, letting like you guys become part of almost, I guess, future creative direction. You know, okay, wow, that really reacted well. Everyone thought that was funny. Okay, cool. We can write that spot down, essentially.
Yeah, and actually what's cool about it is like some people, you know, they post their videos, like their dancing video, their singing videos, and actually some like professional, like singers and dancers. So people like perform down live broadcasts and stuff, and it's actually funny. You could interact with your viewers. And now we're like the top ranking sites in Japan. It's like in the top 10s, and then we have 25 million subscribers. Next slide, please. And so here are some titles of animes we kind of simulcast. And here's a story. Well, I can't believe I'm like the age where I'm going to say this, but you know, the typical grandfather age line where it's like, when I was a young child. Anyways, yes, when I was a young child, it was really, really hard to get access to anime. I mean, you have to go to a local Japanese video rental store and then, you know, you get
and the guy who ran it was always kind of weird.
Yeah, so they're weird. Yeah. And I mean, you have to rent the videotapes, that big, fat, black box, you know? Yeah. It's not a DVD.
You have the secret videotapes behind the counter?
Yes. It's the black DVD. It's not DVD or Blu-rays. Yeah. And, you know, they have, like, you know, contains, like, 4 episodes for each tape. So if you think about it, America was always, like, a month behind. And what actually was frustrating was, you know, some people, like, you know, rent it and never bring it back. So you can't watch it. You know, if it's 4 episodes and if it's like a battle scene, you miss the whole battle scene. You're like, what happened? So it's actually frustrating. But now we have simulcast. And like in best case scenario, you could actually watch an anime that was on air in Japan like 30 minutes after. So that's like the best case scenario. And, well, that's really cool. And actually, you know, that's what we provide in Nico Nico. And you can actually watch a high crisp quality anime. And with the comment system, you actually watch it with your friend and then, you know, you comment it together. So it's like a feeling where you're in a movie with your friends and watching the same movie. And actually, for people who doesn't want, you know, don't want the comments because they want to concentrate on the anime, I'm one of those people, but you can actually disable the comments, like just one click. There's a button where you just say comments and just no comments, and all the comments disappears. And then after that, you could click it again, and all the comments come back. So you can actually watch the anime twice. You know, I mean, first
like
without the comments,
commentary, and one without the comments, like commentary track, user generated commentary track, basically is what that is.
And I mean, like a good commenter actually gets like writes like a really funny comment and like really good timing, so it makes the video much more funnier and more interactive. And yeah, that's like one of the cool things about Nico Nico with the comment system.
And a big deal with the simulcast is, I mean, one of the major concerns that anime fans have always had over the years is, gosh, you know, this came out in Japan, why do I have to wait a year to see it? You know, they resort to other methods of watching content. Mm. We're trying to provide legal alternatives to deliver content faster and, you know, in its pure form also. So a lot of these will be, I mean, directly off of the broadcast from Japan, and we'll get it to you, you know, within, like I said, within possibly 30 minutes of it airing in Japan, which is a huge deal because, I mean, that lag time compared to, gosh, even like 3 years ago, whatever it might be, you know, some of them are days, some of them are minutes, some of them are hours in the delay, but it's not years.
It's not months, years.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So that also helps us try to produce these anime and bring them out on Blu-ray and DVD a little faster, too. And that's something that Funimation's trying to do is close the gap as much as possible so that we can get content to you as fast as possible, because that's a really important thing is no one wants to be you know, behind the times when it comes to pop culture. You know, if this thing was hot a couple months back and you're talking about it now, you know, you're looked at as, you know, this, it's old news. It's old news. So we want to give you the news as fast as possible so that when it's relevant, when everyone's talking about it, the buzz can be there. And then what we really are target for the DVD and Blu-ray releases are, you know, a lot of times these shows are broadcast censored or with some edits and all that business. So when we hit DVD and Blu-ray, it's the, you know, full unedited version with, you know, possible scenes that have been cut out or no steam in certain scenes, if you guys know what I mean, or black bars or whatever else they do. Mm-hmm. So being able to bring content out faster through all the terms of times, you know, whether it be online streaming or bringing it to digital distribution, you know, on your gaming consoles, on Hulu, on Netflix. We just want anime to get out there, give it that exposure. It's getting harder and harder to get things on broadcast, just with the way that networks kind of are tuning to their content, like Adult Swim, for example. You know, they're producing all their original content, so there's not as much room for a lot of our anime content. Not that we're not trying to have that, but we want to provide alternatives to give the fans to be able to see this content when it's fresh. I think it's a big deal.
Yeah, and to speak to that, working with, like, we have next day air content in our storefront, so once it's broadcast on TV, we turn it around within 24 hours and get it live. And all content, regardless if it's anime or, you know, live action TV shows, they perform better. And so with anime content that's, you know, on Adult Swim, it performs so much, you know, much better than catalog anime content.
Mm-hmm. One of the big shows we've got going on right now is Guilty Crown, which airs episode every week, and so which is produced by the same people who did like Ghost in the Shell and stuff like that, so it's really cool. But being able to get that across all these different platforms at one time and get into you know before someone torrents it is an important thing. We're very familiar with that, you know, demographic, and a lot of our demographic hits around there too, because we have very tech savvy, very much the early adopters of technology, so we need to keep up with them. And that's one of the things that's forced us to stay so ahead of the times, is because our consumers, you guys, are way ahead of the general market. You guys are super smart. You know how to handle all technology, and so we've got to keep up with you. Thanks a lot for making my job harder.
But as a general rule, I think that, you know, when you see torrents, you see that kind of stuff, they are as much a problem with the distribution channel as they are with, you know, crumbling morality. Like, you know, it's easy to just go, oh, well, they're bad people. But, you know, so when there's a desire for a product in a timely period or with a simple series of steps to acquire it, and the, you know, the torrent tracker is an easier thing to do than actually purchasing it. It creates, you know, a path of least resistance. And I think that virtually every media channel is increasingly aware of that disparity and the fact that it, you know, it's easy for us to try and, oh, well, it's because they're bad. It's not that. It's sure, some people are just doing it because it's a morality thing or whatever. But if we can eliminate all the roadblocks, you know, all media, the easier it is to get, the cleaner it is to get. People inherently don't mind paying 99 cents for something that they value, or pulling down an episode or a song or what have you. But if that is a giant pain in the ass, then mentally that 99 cents feels like $99. And I think that the more steps we can do to make the content accessible and easy, the less that we have to worry about any kind of piracy.
Definitely.
And creating value.
Yeah. I mean, we don't need to talk about the music side of that. Of course, it's like
well known.
Yeah. But that sums up kind of what we had to talk about today. We definitely be open to take any questions. So,
first hand was
hand up first, right, gentleman with the glasses and beard. Which
are content creators getting compensated adequately?
In terms of for the like online streaming and all that types of business, or just in general?
The people who are making the videos, people who are creating the music, and the model you guys are discussing, are they getting compensated?
Yes, definitely.
On the music side, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the model that we're approaching is really similar to creating a soundtrack for a film, so to speak. Again, you know, the process that we have is not about going out and just grabbing music or licensing music or finding unknown artists and taking their music from them. You know, we're actually going through this just as we've done with our other music business, and going out and talking with artists and talking with producers. As a matter of fact, on our drive here, we drove a 3-hour drive, took 6 hours. But on that 6 hours, all we did was listen to music from different producers that we wanted to work with. And then once we are able to figure out which producers and which tracks we like, you know, we sit down and we do a real contract with them. No, so they're clearly adequately compensated.
And the same goes for all the video content. I mean, there's royalties being distributed for everything. Our share, you know, we get our share, but of course there's royalties paid out on every type of content, which becomes a very difficult thing to track because we have over, 200 plus properties now, and each one tracks royalties differently. So there's a lot of accounting to do.
Well, and if I could add to that, one of the things that we've also done is create a platform for unknown artists to be able to get some exposure. We're developing a fan submission process that will allow anime fans that are musicians to submit their own songs for us to listen to. And if we like some of them and they fit for specific titles, then we're going to give an opportunity for those artists to have their music placed on one of our releases to get out in front of the world. So clearly, they would be adequately compensated for doing so.
Yeah.
You choose a question.
I study American teenagers and their digital behavior for a living, and I've noticed a huge uptick in the past couple years across all types of teenagers, you name it, and all geographies in America, of interest in anime and also in the books that go along with it, not just
manga.
That. Yeah, so what do you attribute that to, besides the technology and the ability to stream it and access? Besides access, do you have any cultural...
I think so. A lot of anime is targeted, especially in Japan, to be created for that specific demographic. A lot of it has, you know, it's very teen angsty, has a lot of that kind of vibe that goes with it. In Japan, I'll let Rio talk about this, I mean, anime is targeted specifically to, you know, certain demographics already in the creation of it. So, I mean, anime is, you know, a mass media in Japan.
Yes. And it's funny because there's actually I think actually this happened to America too, but in Japan it's really hard to say, but there's a discrimination toward anime lovers, which they call otaku, and they see them as, you know, they're like disgusting, they're nerdy, they're like dorks, they're just losers, and people are kind of like, Japanese people are really kind of shy about that, or they're actually scared that they're gonna get this look like that, so they kind of tend to hide that. But you know, they all like animes because they have like millions of the anime shows, and this is how where I mean American is influencing it, because America had that kind of phase a little bit, but it kind of ended really quick because they're more open. They're like, hey, who cares about what people think? I like what I like to do. People shouldn't be judging me, and you know, we broadcast that on like anime conventions, and people see that, and Japan see that because we have like 100,000 viewers every like at those conventions, and people like to see it, and they're like, oh wow, I shouldn't be ashamed. Like people in Japan would be like, I shouldn't be ashamed though. Like,
I think that's an interesting point you brought up, that what we do here at our U.S. anime fan base is influencing Japan's culture.
Yes.
It's always been looked at as the other way, you know, Japan influencing the U.S., but we're actually influencing their culture because, you know, Japan is a much more reserved country in comparison to the U.S. Our fan base here, and an otaku in the U.S. wears that badge, you know, with pride.
Yes.
Whereas in Japan, it's kind of looked at as a...
Yeah, they hide it, but now they're like, okay, we should be more, like, open.
I think, with these, you know, that really hits that teenage demographic with those types of emotions they're going through, you know, especially the hormones, let's just put it that way. a lot of anime kind of instigate certain hormones that aren't as prevalent in U.S. animation sometimes. There's a lot of fan service shows which if you're not familiar with that term, it's...
it's probably worth looking up.
Yeah. just not at work.
I will throw out as well, I think that, you know, coming from a video games background, what we've seen over the past, let's say, 20 years, right? You could probably go back about 30, I think, at this point. My first console was Commodore 64 when I was 7, so, yeah. So 28 years. What we've seen, I think, is a normalization of games. So you kind of go through, I think, a phase where... as our economy and our digital distribution, you know, like Sony is pushing stuff across the pond, you guys are pulling stuff across the pond, is that you get an effect where parents have, you know, perhaps looked at this stuff. And for them, it was niche and it was hard to look at. Like, you know, when I was growing up, video games, you were a nerd and no one liked you because you should be playing sports. You get a growing amount of parents that then are pushing to their children that this is a normal thing. This is something mom and dad does. This is something mom and dad watches, you know, in the case of anime. As well, then you have a proliferation of younger targeted shows that are much more, if they're not exactly anime, they are close enough to it to remove the, ooh, that's weird kind of stigma. You know, like Avatar is Avatar Last Airbender is a U.S. produced, but, I mean, you know, if you're not an expert, it's pretty easy to not tell a difference. As a result, then, I think you have a generation of kids that have grown up with, well, let's just call it a variety of animation styles. You know, for me, it was Transformers, He-Man, or G.I. Joe. We'll go back to the G.I. Joe comment. And you looked at a character from an anime, and they just looked weird. They didn't look right. The broader our palette is, though, the more accepting we are of new things and that there can be good stories told. And just simply, there's been a vast proliferation of available content. So it's not just all emo girls. It's not just all, you know, hyperthyroid He-Man men. You can kind of pick and choose from the genres you like now due to that increased distribution. So I think between a force of normalization, an increasingly global economy and distribution platform, and just an acceptance over time, that if you see a rise in teenagers, that would be my off-the-cuff guess as to where it's coming from.
Cool. Let's go over here.
Just a quick question, and it might be either for Justin or for Margot. Obviously, you guys are upping the ante with music and upping the ante with video games so that they appeal to general masses as opposed to just anime lovers or that sort of genre of lovers. But I'm wondering, what's in the future for film as opposed to just like a two-hour movie that may be shown on TV or that you may buy from your local anime shop, but like... Big
like
budget
theatrical
film.
Releases.
Yeah.
We've worked on doing some theatrical releases. Our most recent one was Full Metal Alchemist: The Sacred Star of Milos, which Full Metal Alchemist is a very popular series here in the U.S. Brotherhood's being shown on Adult Swim right now. We did a limited theatrical run during January, February. Yeah, and actually was a very successful run for us. So if we can continue to get content that's produced that quality and you know, we want to continue doing types of releases like that. They're very expensive to do also, which on the grand scale of entertainment, anime is still, at least in the U.S., is still a little bit lower budget in terms of some of that type of content distribution. But we're working on it, and we want to, you know, proceed with trying to get that as, you know, built up as possible. Another release we did previously was Summer Wars, which was a really awesome film. We actually tried to get that one nominated for an Academy Award. I blame Yogi Bear for not having that happen because they didn't get their stuff in time, so they could only pick 3 titles rather than the 5 titles or something like that because there weren't enough applicants. Anyway, but we every time we get a really high caliber film like that, we want to increase the theatrical distribution. So.
And I think I think it'd be a great idea for, you know, a lot of distributors to start taking on the approach that the, you know, major studios are testing right now with you know, releasing stuff pre-theatrically, digitally, or on demand before download. And so I think that would be a great way to, you know, to test the markets. And I wish that, you know, a lot of independent studios could do that, especially anime studios.
Margo, you choose someone.
Oh. I'll choose you.
Hi. Hey. I work in digital media, so there's a lot of discussion of social TV and second screen TV, which is basically the idea of watching TV, your television, and then utilizing mobile devices, tablets, your laptop, and the idea that most people don't just sit and watch a show anymore. And with the expansion of people socially talking about content and the struggle to get people to watch content, not download it, you know, most people don't watch live TV anymore. They're, you know, they're recording it or they're downloading it. I wanted to get everyone's sort of opinions on thoughts on if that would be successful in this genre, especially with things like, you know, new music that you're adding to it, new creative, social networks. I mean, I think it's an interesting, and, you know, it's with Margo, with your distribution platforms, do you think it is something that could be successful for this genre?
You want to take it first? I'll go for it. All right. One of the things we are working on is creating more applications for, you know, TVs and working with, you know, the different digital distribution outlets like that. So once all that, if that all gets integrated in, I think that's a wonderful way to continue pushing the media. We're actually working on a mobile app ourselves, so that you can watch our content, you know, mobily on your devices. Because we offer our own streaming services. Also, we have tons of, you know, free episodes on, and we also have a subscription plan. And so, I think anime is a very social social form of media. The anime crowd is a very vocal crowd, to say the least. So being able to leverage that, I think, would be optimal for what we want to do. And I think with creating these additional apps and TVs having that built-in functionality, I think that's a great future for us.
Yeah, I think it would be, you know, it's a pretty good idea to test that out with the anime genre. I know right now, with our platform, we've done these, you know, Twitter and Facebook competitions between movies to see, you know, people can vote on what they want to see, and then we have it on sale for a discounted rate. And I think it would be a great idea to do that for anime, so then people can start discovering it through their friends and, you know, through social media. So I think it would definitely work for anime.
Right, I'm back. Yeah, you.
Yeah.
Sorry, back.
Margo, and it's kind of playing off what you said, Mike, in terms of barrier of engagement. I couldn't help but notice that on the Dragon Ball Z, you know, it's number 8, but also it had like a top banner on the homepage. So I was kind of curious on a strategy level if there's any thought given to how to assure that studios have an opportunity strategically to be successful and not just always seeing the one that everyone's always clicking, which has the top banner space, is always getting the most viewership.
Oh, for that one specifically, it was because we had launched Dragon Ball Z that week. Mm-hmm. The season 9, we had launched it, and so the first episode was free. And so that's what we were promoting at that time. But, you know, typically on that banner space, it's various movies, films, whatever we're working on promoting. At that time, you know, across all platforms. I mean, across all studios. So it's not just that. It's just that for that week.
Okay, so
it was there. So, you know, I figured might as well include that, as well as, you know, it was in the top 8. And after scrolling down, there was, you know, at least 3 or 4 other different anime titles that were not Funimation that were featured in the top 50.
Okay. Well, thank
and
you.
Also Sony being an awesome partner to work with.
You're welcome.
That's right. Aw. I just felt the love.
I skipped over you, so I'll give you a question.
Hi, I'm Yalçın from Turkey. I'm coming here from Istanbul. So we don't have access to contents like Hulu, Netflix, or iTunes in Turkey because of the copyright issues. I would like to ask to Margo, what about Sony Entertainment Network? Do you have a global strategy to share these contents to us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. At the moment, we are in 9 territories. And slowly but surely, we're trying to launch, you know, globally. I mean, I don't know exactly what countries, but we are working on launching in various territories. And to talk about anime in that sense, we recently just launched anime TV content at the end of last year in the UK and Australia. And so anime is slowly trying to expand on our platform. But yeah, we do have a plan to expand globally.
Rio, you choose.
The guy in the red, then.
For Craig Crossley, it's awesome that you're bringing new content into anime. Do you find that you're able to bring fans of the musicians as well? And do you have marketing strategies that you feel are pretty effective for that?
Let me tell you what's amazing about that is that as Harry and I sit down and talk to different artists and producers, everybody has their own anime title that they're so affectionate towards. They might be, you know, kind of in the closet with it, kind of like Rio was talking about earlier, where they don't want everybody to know that they're a true Dragon Ball Z fan. But as we talk to them, they start opening up and telling us all of these stories about anime and their childhood. So it's really, honestly, helped our process out a lot. Because the more we talk about it and the more we sit down and let people know exactly what we're doing, we're now getting artists that are coming to us and saying, hey, you know, if you guys do something for this particular title, I'd love to be involved. And we're not just talking about, you know, people that like making music. We're talking about award-winning musicians that really want to be involved. And to your point, that's really where I was going with the cross-pollination, because we're able to take that artist and their fan base, and then we're able to expose them to anime. So now, because you love Musician X, and whatever Musician X does, you want to be involved with, now if that Musician X is working with an anime title, now you're more subject to go and actually start looking at that title. One of the things that we're working on is actually producing music videos that use our music. I place the artist inside that video with the title. So now you've got that seamless integration. So now the anime fan is watching Musician X and now says, wow, Musician X is pretty good. I'd like to go buy their music. But at the same time, Musician X's fan base is watching the title and saying, wow, I wouldn't mind going to Funimation.com or Sony Entertainment and getting more from that title and watching it. So for Harry and I, it's a pretty unique time. And it allows us to do some things musically that, that are pretty unheard of. So, yes.
Go ahead and take the next question.
The next question.
Right here, front and center.
Thanks. So what I'm hearing from you guys is a really interesting business model focusing on increasing access, reducing the friction, as you say, and really like going toe-to-toe with the fan sub market. Now, there is another business model that's kind of diametrically opposed to that, that's arisen in the last year or so. Curious to get your thoughts on it, where you now have anime companies charging, you know, the Japanese DVD price, like $50, $60 a volume in Japan and Europe, essentially not focusing on the U.S. market at all and just going after Japan, going after Europe, going after Australia, where they will pay those prices and kind of ignoring the American market and just assuming that we're all just going to download it anyway. Curious what your thoughts are. Like, what do you think about that model versus yours in terms of how it will affect anime in the future?
Well, I guess that'd be more specifically to me. The way our strategy has been, we've always looked at, again, creating accessibility, making it as comparable to U.S. other U.S. content and pricing as possible. I mean, of course, there's certain limitations we have in trying to match a $10 price point for a DVD. But, you know, our big focus has always been North America. So we can't really speak for doing that overseas. You know, we typically don't have rights beyond our territories. We've done, you know, sub-licensing to UK or to Australia. But those markets still kind of, you know, meld with our markets. They're not exactly the high-priced collectors markets that, say, Japan would have, where you buy a Blu-ray that's, you know, $100, $200. We have seen other, you know, other distributors in the U.S. who release some of those premium releases at those price points. We're a U.S. company, wholly, so that is really our focus. Now, I think in terms of worldwide, working with licensors, working with our Japanese partners, they need our support as much as we need their support. So in order for content to be continually created, in Japan, they have started relying on dollars coming out of the U.S. also to continue these products. So, you know, specifically for a particular licensor, whether it be Square Enix or you know, whichever studio is producing it, they all have different strategies. Some companies are more U.S. focused. Some companies are more globally focused. And it's kind of a thing right now where, you know, everyone's testing the waters. There's no right way to do anything. That's with the speed of the anime market being what it is, and also with video games. I mean, there's so much room for ideas and so much room to change your business models, because media and transmedia is just changing so quickly.
Yeah, as a general rule, I mean, Electronic Arts has been very proactive about this. I mean, ignoring any segment of your customer base and failing to think globally and digitally these days just kind of pushes you towards dinosaur and there's a big comet in the sky. It's a dangerous time to be thinking about only traditional distribution models and ignoring a portion of your potential audience in a market that I think anyone creating content should be seeing as growing and consistently and rapidly doing so. So I think I would consider it a little short-sighted. Yeah. Now we're low on time.
We've got four minutes.
One quick one.
Right here. Glasses. Yes, sir.
And the indeterminately called hat.
Yeah,
toque perhaps.
Beanie.
So my question is for Mike. I'm really excited for the Mass Effect anime that I just heard about, Paragon Lost. I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit and any other possible tie-ins for BioWare games and anime.
Sure. Just at a high level, we haven't talked too much about the content or plot of what's happening with Mass Effect. We have done, basically, the really nice thing is Funimation and BioWare have been through this process before. We've worked with the directors, worked with the studios, what I can assure you is that these guys have been fantastic in terms of trying to get and grok the worlds that we've created and making sure that things are quite true to the games or true to the world that exists. And we've been making great strides, I think. And, you know, occasionally stuff kind of falls down a little bit, but we try to make sure that all the products coming out with any of our brands on them are kind of canonical and tie in. So you feel like you're enriching your experience. You know, you play the game, and if you've read the novel and read the comic and watched the animated film, you feel like it's a little bit richer. You understand the world and the characters more. So the Mass Effect guys they're a little earlier than we are in terms of production, so not as much info out there.
I mean, I could divulge a little bit that we
if you've got spoilers, you can.
We have a teaser trailer actually that's playing at our booth down at Screenburn, and we have sketches basically what's been released so far. The synopsis is also out there, so I can divulge that information. Sure. Which it's actually centered around James Vega, who's a character in Mass Effect 3. It basically touts his backstory as to how he's become the character that he is now. I haven't played Mass Effect 3 yet.
James is he's an interesting character because he kind of comes in medias res. Like he drops into the story. And he serves a really interesting role in Mastery. He's kind of the guy who hasn't been there the whole time, so he can occasionally ask the new guy question, like, I'm sorry, what? Which is good, because if a new player comes in, having a character that you don't have to like feel like you have to go look at on Wikipedia, he can ask the question you kind of want to know. But Vega himself has actually got some really interesting history. He's performed a few feats of heroism and derring do that get referenced in the games and then get explicitly played out.
Mm-hmm. And that's something. That same thing with Dragon Age, with our main character being Cassandra. I mean, being able to really fill in that backstory for her, which she was in Dragon Age 2,
yep.
And some insight into the Seeker organization, as well as being able to see the Chantry that's out there with the Divine and all that business. So it's really awesome.
All of which will be interesting info later.
Yes,
later so. For things.
Keep your eye on that. All right, we've got one more minute. We're done. All right, we've got to cut it off. Thank you guys very much for attending. I'll be around by the Funimation booth in Screenburn, so if you have any additional questions, you can always feel free to drop by there. Don't know what to say about the rest of these guys. But again, seriously, thank you guys for showing up and not going to Joss Whedon's panel. I applaud your efforts. And
well done. Thanks, guys.